It's crazy how few fucks this shark gives. He'll eat naked ladies, he'll eat little kids. Oh no.
We've been trapped in our house a while. Jaws, the shark lurking in the dark. That's a fun little song by Neil Cicierga under the pen name Lemon Demon, which is an inaccurate summary of the plot of the movie Jaws, so I hear.
I can be heard okay?
And can I be heard okay?
Yeah, good thing we checked that we could be heard okay.
Yeah, we are professionals.
Yeah, so this is our beautiful episode on Jaws. We recorded about 15 minutes of good content that, due to technical issues, couldn't be used.
Sad reacts only in the comments.
Yeah, the tragic thing was that I could be heard perfectly, but I don't say anything useful on this podcast.
That is untrue.
Danny couldn't be heard, so it was a track of just me going, oh. Really? And that's not what you're here for, so.
Well, maybe some of you are. We can release that as bonus content.
If you're into that, I think you should contact me personally and pay me a lot more. So, yeah, we missed some stuff and we might try introduce what we're doing now. So.
Yeah. So we are Aoife and Danny, and yeah, we are the Movie Aficionados podcast. And this is episode 3, where we're discussing the movie that many of you probably would have thought we would have discussed way earlier in this project, Jaws.
But the thing is that you need to start with a manageable chunk of fish.
That is true.
Like a goldfish.
Yes.
In one scene in the after credits of a movie that is not at all about
and
goldfish.
Then you need to bring that up to one 10-minute scene in a movie that is not about giant gouramis. And then you can tackle a 2-hour film about a shark.
Indeed, we can, as long as you check your mic's working first. A big fish movie.
A big fish movie.
A movie that is about a big fish, and a movie that was pretty big. You could even say it made waves.
You could also say it was Jawsome.
Could you? Could you say that safely? Without being at risk of personal violence?
I'm willing to take that risk. So, Jaws was originally based on a book written by Peter Benchley in 1974.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was adapted into the Spielberg film that we all know and love in 1975. It attracted... It was a pretty famous movie, as many people will know.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first summer blockbusters attracted, I think, over 62 million people who first saw it when it was released in the US alone.
And this was back when populations were smaller.
Yeah.
Human population.
Yeah, unfortunately, shark populations were higher.
Yeah.
And then they got lower, which we will discuss later.
Yeah, I think the main thing that we lost from our original intro is the fact that Jaws is about a shark, but the shark is not realistic in terms of shark behavior.
No.
And some of that is because of the limitations of where science is at the time. And some of it is because it's a horror movie.
Yeah. This is a horror shark. This is a normal shark that's been turned into a monster purely to terrify movie audiences. And unfortunately, it did have ripple effects.
How wonderful.
Even the author of the original book, who campaigned for shark conservation for the rest of his life, after the release of both the book and the film, said that if he knew what he now knew about sharks when he would never have written the book. He acknowledged that it did have a severe impact on the actual live animals and was very sorry that he had a part to play in that.
Yeah. How much of an impact did it have?
But in the years following Jaws, the number of large sharks on the coast of the east, on the east coast of the United States fell by 50%.
Ooh, that's bad.
Yeah.
And I bet it being the 70s, the populations were already somewhat depleted.
Well, they were starting to... Sharks were kind of okay up until about the 60s, 70s, 80s. And then they started to suffer worldwide declines, the declines of which we're still seeing today. So that was due to... Overfishing is a main one. Revenge cullings is not, you know, massive in the scheme of things, but it definitely has an impact. So that's when say if a shark attacks a human, humans then go out and kill any shark they can find in the surrounding area, when the offending shark has mainly moved off to new territory at this point.
Yeah, so it's an emotional human reaction to a act of predation, and often not even predation, just...
But then even overall, since the 1970s, shark populations globally have declined by 50 to 80%.
Bad.
Yeah.
So I think we have like about an hour of content about sharks coming up anyway. Before we drop you right back into what we have salvaged, this being a horror shark, it isn't a realistic portrayal of actual attacks on humans by sharks. However, as the existence of revenge culling suggests, there are still attacks on humans by sharks. So what are the kinds?
So shark attacks on humans are very rare. We will talk about this later. But the International Shark Attack File, run by the Museum of Florida, which is, it's a really cool website. We will link it down below. But it's super cool. You should give it a, you should check it out if you're anyway interested. But they have kind of categorized all the shark attacks that they get into three broad categories. So those three are the hit and run, the bump and bite, and the sneak attack. So the first one we discuss is the hit and run, which is when... It typically happens in shallow water. A shark will rush in with no warning, bite or swipe at the victim once, and then disappear again.
Okay, cool. So we will drop you into our discussion on that now. Obviously, no animal likes to take risky prey. So is the hit and run method kind of a way to lessen the chance you're going to get attacked back?
Well, like, if you think, it's far easier to hunt something if it doesn't know you're coming.
Yeah, so I can see like a hit and run is really beneficial, because let's say you just slash, it's going to bleed to death now. Then you just back off until the thing's way weaker, and then you go back and munch.
We're not 100% sure why sharks attack people. Because in a hit and run, the shark doesn't come back.
Do they taste bad?
Well, yeah, like, if you think of, say, a seal compared to a human does not have as much energy-rich blubber as a seal does.
There's... Speak for yourself. I'm very rich in adipose tissue.
Do you want to get eaten by a great white shark?
None of your business. Probably less. Like, I don't think it counts as blubber. Human adipose tissue doesn't count as blubber, does it?
I don't think so.
No, okay. So that's fair.
But, okay. So anyway, a seal is much more nutritional.
Nutritionally beneficial?
Yes.
Yes.
I cannot speak.
You can.
Why am I doing a podcast?
Because you just care about sharks so much.
Yeah. But, so a seal is a better option for a shark to eat.
Yeah.
So people think with the hit and run, it rushes in, it grabs, and then it goes, oh, I don't want this actually. And then just leaves.
Do you have a tweet about that?
Yeah, yeah. You should totally go onto my Twitter at Akadon1. You'll find it. Yeah, it's fine. You should totally make a resurgence. But yeah, and then another theory is that if you're swimming in a place where a shark's usual prey would be, a shark will see you there and kind of goes, well, I don't think it's prey, so therefore it might be predator, and therefore it's competition for me. So some people think a hit and run is quite similar to the way I was a great white shark just chilling, and then I saw another great white, I would rush up and like bump it and be like, this is my patch, fuck off. But then obviously a great white can do a lot more damage to a human being than it can do to another great white.
Yeah, we're not adapted to the water.
No.
Humans, stop trying to be aquatic mammals. You're not aquatic mammals. It's embarrassing.
It's not gonna happen. So yeah, and then there's another theory, because some people are saying like a shark is an apex predator. How on earth could it confuse something like a human with a seal? And then some people are saying, well, if you're an apex predator, you have to take every chance you have. So if you see something that's somewhat similar, you're gonna at least go and have a look.
Also, sharks have no hands, so if they want to investigate something because they're curious, they have to bite it.
Apex predator doesn't mean smart. Like, I'm not going to say they're stupid. We were talking about how they've got great navigational equipment and stuff. But it is a very human, like, anthrocentric idea to think that something successful has to have complex cognitive abilities.
That is very true.
Like, fungus is really successful. You don't need to be very brain heavy to be successful. So yeah, you can become a very successful predator by taking a quick munch on things to just double check. Is that food? Doesn't taste like food. I'm gonna go away. Didn't seem to be a predator though. It didn't chase me. Okay, I guess that's a neutral experience.
Yeah. And Cher, think of the amount of times we do dumb shit. Like that time I had a mug and it was full of tea. And I was like, I wonder if this mug is microwave safe. And I nearly turned the whole mug over with the tea still in it to have a look.
Sometimes I'll taste something to see what it is.
Yeah.
And then I'll be like, why did I do that? That was nail varnish. Obviously, I'm doing this slightly less now that we're in a pandemic, but not it, zero.
It happens.
Yeah. So okay. Other than hit and run, what other...
So the other two categories then are bump and bite and sneak.
Okay. Bump and bite, similar to hit and run?
Kind of. So bump and bite and sneak are the ones that you're most likely to die from.
Mm-hmm.
In a hit and run, if you're going to die, it's because of blood loss or shock.
Mm-hmm.
In bump and bite or sneak, it's more associated with aggressive behavior or hunting for food behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So they typically occur mostly with divers or people who are a little bit more offshore. So a bump and bite is that the shark will circle for a little while beforehand and kind of get a feeling for what you are, and then it moves in and bites,
mm-hmm.
and then it can sometimes come back and keep doing that. A sneak attack is kind of like hit and run, in the sense that the shark comes from nowhere,
mm-hmm.
so it hits, like it literally hits you out of nowhere, but then it doesn't move away, it keeps coming back.
Okay, so both of these are situations where the shark has slightly more urge to eat the human, I guess.
Yeah.
So,
or it sees you as a threat and it wants you to leave.
I can really see why people would perceive sharks as good horror villains,
mm-hmm.
particularly with the circling behavior, is this idea that you're helpless and mm-hmm. sitting there and it's going around you and you can't stop it. But you said that this is tends to be towards the deep water. Do sharks come up to the shore very often?
Depends on the shark.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Individual like, shark or species shark?
Species.
Yeah.
And like there will be individual variation.
Mm-hmm.
Bull sharks have been known to attack people standing in water up to, like, that's knee deep.
How?
I mean, bull sharks are quite cool.
Yeah.
They're far more tolerant of fresh water than a lot of other sharks.
Mm-hmm.
They've been found thousands of kilometers upriver. They just have a very efficient osmoregulation system, mm-hmm. so they're able to deal with the differences. They can get quite aggressive. They're quite big, bulky, mean-looking sharks.
They've got long dorsal fins? Or that guy seems to, anyway.
That's
a
pectoral fin.
That's a pectoral fin. Because it's where his pecs would be.
Yeah.
Dorsal means back.
Yeah.
I know this.
So a lot of attacks that have been attributed to great whites are probably the work of a bull shark instead.
So this specific movie, I know the premise of our podcast is that we speak about the fish and the movie's just a thinly veiled excuse, but is the attribution of shark attacks to great whites somewhat because of the Jaws franchise?
Well, I think Jaws completely changed how we viewed sharks.
Yeah?
And I think it's really interesting to look at it. Like, Peter Benchley, who wrote it,
mm-hmm.
did not anticipate the kind of reaction
mm-hmm.
this book and this film was going to get. He actually said afterwards, one of his quotes is, "Knowing what I know now, I could never write that book today. Sharks don't target human beings, and they certainly don't hold grudges."
Mm-hmm.
So he published it. It took off. He saw how the film changed people's attitudes. And then he felt so guilty, he spent the rest of his life working on shark conservation. After the Jaws was released, the number of large sharks off the US eastern coast fell by 50%.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
So people are attacking sharks.
Yeah.
How often do people attack sharks?
So one stat that's often given is humans kill about 100 million sharks every year. So that's about 3 per second.
God, that's awful.
Yeah.
In the pause, it took me to reckon with how awful that is. Like 9 or 10 sharks died.
And it's, where are my stats? So global shark populations declined by 50 to 80% since the 1970s.
Some of that must be attributable to other ocean factors.
Oh, yeah,
like
of course.
Like overfishing.
Overfishing is the biggest threat
to
sharks around the world today. Mm-hmm. It's real bad. Like, some species have been hit particularly hard. The oceanic white tip, which I'll circle back to in a minute, because it is
much
quite...
like a great white...
much like an oceanic white tip.
Okay.
Their populations have fallen by about 99%.
Yikes.
In the past few years. They used to be one of the most
mm-hmm.
abundant shark species. They were actually implicated in the case of the Indianapolis ship that was mentioned in the movie Jaws
mm-hmm.
in 1945. It was a US naval ship that was sunk by a Japanese torpedo. They were involved in bringing the Hiroshima bomb
mm-hmm.
Or components of it to
yeah.
Japan. There's a crew of about 1,200 people. Only 300 survived, so about 150 of those were killed by sharks. And they reckon that white tips are quite curious and they don't really fear things, so they reckon that a lot of open water shark incidents are due to white tips. But they have massive fins, so shark finning has really hit them badly.
The use of shark fins in traditional medicine
yeah.
and cuisine.
Yeah.
These fish, sorry, the sharks that would come together to attack, for example, sailors who are abandoned at sea, are presumably exhibiting the behavior that has been evolved into them for dealing with like a whale carcass.
Yeah.
So they're not targeting humans. What they're doing is following the instinct of, oh, there's a great number of my guys
mm-hmm.
over here investigating what seems to be a great big pile of yum food. Let's go have a snack.
Also, if you think about an open water species, like a pelagic
mm-hmm.
species, the open water, open ocean, there's...
Blue desert.
Yeah,
blue desert.
Like, blue sharks are another pelagic species that are also targeted by
mm-hmm.
shark finning. Blue sharks and white tips just travel for thousands of kilometers hoping
to find something. Yeah.
So if you suddenly have a bunch of people flailing in the water and you haven't eaten in weeks...
Yeah, I think you said to me as well that the... struggling, like a swimmer who isn't a confident swimmer and isn't moving rhythmically can make waves and signals in the water that are very similar to that of a struggling fish
yeah.
from a shark's point
yeah.
of view. So that can lead to more attacks than...
Yeah, so part of the advice people give to swimmers who are swimming in
mm-hmm.
areas where sharks are known to occur, like there's a few things. There's like most sharks are crepuscular, so that means that they...
Dawn and dusk.
At dawn and dusk. So... don't swim at those times. Obviously, don't swim if a shark has been sighted recently.
Mm-hmm.
Don't swim where people are fishing, because if a shark associates an area with food and you're in the water,
your food.
Yeah. Don't swim with open wounds. So you don't want blood in the water. Also, interestingly, like that splashing, so
mm-hmm.
kind of not swimming with strong strokes again. A shark listening out is going to be like, that's a wounded animal. I'm going to chance my luck. Jewelry, so watches, anything that glints, that look like fish scales. Also, anything that looks like counter shading. So if you're wearing swimsuits with contrasting colors,
mm-hmm.
or if you scorched your back the day before, but your belly is pale white,
mm-hmm.
sharks are tuned in to kind of... Because if you think, even looking at these pictures of sharks, a lot of marine animals have counter shading. So their
yeah.
backs are darker than their bellies
mm-hmm.
to help with camouflage. So if you also happen to look like that, they're kind of like,
that could be food.
Yeah.
But all of this is to try avoid a shark attacking you as a human.
Yeah.
How likely is that to occur?
Very, very slim.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely, extremely slim. Obviously, it does happen. And the numbers of attacks in general have increased over the past couple of years, but that's just because that's due to a couple of factors. So more people are reporting them. Also, more people are near the coast and more people are taking part in recreational activities that put them in the water.
I wouldn't have thought that, but I guess when you say it, like surfing mm-hmm. has become a much bigger thing, kind of jet skiing,
yeah.
that kind of thing has been much more common.
Yeah.
In recent decades.
Mm-hmm. Like 2019 actually had a lower than average number.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good, but still the number was pretty low. What is also interesting is that historically of all the recorded shark attacks, 80% of those have been on men.
Okay.
Yeah. So they reckon that this isn't due to any biological reason. Like sharks aren't targeting
mm-hmm.
male swimmers. It's just because historically men were more likely to do the activities that put you in direct contact with sharks than women.
It was thought to be really unlucky for women to be on boats, so yeah.
Or if you think of if you think of even women being allowed
to
surf or swim or go deep sea diving or any of that kind of thing.
Like I'm fairly sure men are more likely to get hit by lightning than women, and there is no reason for that. It's
yeah,
just
exactly.
Outside sports,
yeah.
like risky sports,
yeah.
are more likely to be male dominated.
Yeah. So like on average for 2019, so this is again from the International Shark Attack File, there were 140 alleged shark-human interactions.
Mm-hmm.
And they've actually found that the gender bias has started to become more equal
mm-hmm.
over the past few years.
When you say human-shark interactions,
yeah.
is that generally an attack? Or?
Yeah, that's what they class
it. That's the only thing they're going to
yeah.
report to the shark attack
yeah.
survey.
And they did find that out of that, so 64 of those attacks were unprovoked, and then 41 were provoked.
Mm-hmm. Who's provoking shark attacks and why?
I mean, if you think of how people generally interact with wild animals
yeah.
on a daily basis, like we just have to look at Instagram and Twitter. There is massive controversy with shark conservationist Ocean Ramsey last year, I believe, for swimming with a great white and deliberately going very, very close to it and touching it and kind of going, oh, but look, the shark isn't attacking me. And it's like, yeah, but I can poke a dog in the face.
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, it won't attack me. But that 10th time
is really bad for dog reputation.
Yeah.
yeah. And leads to like, what was it? Doberman are
yeah.
illegal to be bred in, pit bulls are illegal to
yeah.
be bred in the UK. Yeah, so it's the same kind of thing. It's like, oh, you're trying to prove a point. But one, you're still annoying that shark.
Mm-hmm.
And two, if that shark does react to the provocation, it's going to be very, very bad for sharks.
And I think it's something that I find very frustrating and also very interesting, that if you look at the view of wild animals in media, a wild animal is either the paragon of virtue and can do no wrong,
mm-hmm.
or is the worst thing ever and has to be destroyed. And it's just not, like, animals don't have a concept
of good and evil.
No.
No.
And I think people often go like, oh, so you think animals don't have feelings then? It's like, no, they absolutely do.
Yeah.
But it, like, a shark's emotional landscape is not the same as a human's emotional
absolutely
landscape.
Absolutely not. It's way wetter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but, you know, a shark isn't out to get you, but it's not a harmless animal either.
Yeah, a shark doesn't love you or hate you.
A shark
is trying to get by in its shark life, doing its shark thing. This is kind of a tangent. This isn't even a tangent. It's out of nowhere, like a great white and the deep blue. The last two episodes, we talked about fish that were kept domestically.
Mm-hmm.
Do people keep sharks as pets? They probably shouldn't,
yeah.
but...
From checking, you know, my book about responsible marine keeping, there's about 10 shark species in the aquarium trade. There's about 6 ray and skate species. It's generally frowned upon. Like even the smaller sharks that people keep in home aquaria, so things like epaulette sharks, which are super cool, remind me about them later, they still grow to about a meter long.
Mm-hmm.
That's too big
for most home aquaria.
And also most people just can't. It's like a public aquarium can keep them way better than you can. So just leave it to those people. They're also they're complicated to keep in captivity. Great whites can't survive long-term in captivity. Also, it's the same kind of attitude I would have towards people keeping highly dangerous venomous snakes at home.
Yeah.
It's not an animal out to get you, but it's still quite a formidable animal that you need to treat with respect.
There's a lot of risk there, and it's doubtful that you're able to give it the care that it needs.
Mm-hmm. Leave it to the experts.
Yeah, I think I've seen sharks in aquariums though. Aquaria. do people domesticate them? Those were definitely smaller sharks than the great white. I think I saw a shark that was like maybe 2 or 3 meters long.
Yeah, so a lot of sharks that are kept in aquaria, a lot of them are like bamboo sharks.
Mm-hmm.
So they're things like the epaulette. I believe maybe I've gotten that wrong. But generally small, more docile sharks. Sand tiger sharks would be another one. So they're the ones with the big snaggly teeth and the humpbacks. And they look really aggressive, but they're fairly chill.
I can envision them. I know these guys.
Yeah.
They're cool.
They also practice intrauterine cannibalism, which is really cool.
They hunt each other in the womb?
Yeah.
That's
really
cool.
So the mother would have kind of 2 uteri, and then only one baby will emerge from each after having killed and eaten its siblings.
Mm.
Which is great.
That sounds so uncomfortable, though. Like,
a sand tiger shark will go through 35,000 teeth in its lifetime.
Yeah, so people have shark tooth necklaces.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's very unlike eating shark fin soup, in that you can kind of get an infinite supply of shark tooth by, like, they just fall out.
They do.
They just keep growing and they just keep falling out.
I mean, I'm nervous about buying anything with animal products, because I don't know where they've come from. A lot of sharks do get killed for their jaws.
Mm-hmm.
So even though they do have cartilaginous...
Oh, Jaws?
Yeah, the movie. But people do... Obviously, sport fishing is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
People do kill sharks for trophies, and the jaws are one of those trophies. Like, the jaws of a great white could be sold for about $10,000.
Are sharks protected anywhere?
They are, but it's hard to...
regulate.
Yeah. If you think of something like an oceanic white tip that can move from different territories, trying to protect that is going to be quite difficult.
Marine law?
Yeah. Yeah. It needs to get better. And I think public opinion does have a lot to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
It is shifting. I'm just worried that we'll shift towards sharks are cuddly. And it's like, no, sharks are cool and they need to be respected, but they're not cuddly. But it definitely is shifting away from sharks are mindless killing machines.
Good. I'm going to say, don't pet wild animals.
Mm-hmm.
Don't pet domestic animals that you're not familiar with. And don't pet New Yorkers. We'll get on to it. Don't pet even your own animals if you're not sure what their distress signals look like and how they communicate that. But yeah, tell me about New Yorkers.
Oh yeah, so the International Shark Attack File has loads of interesting stats to kind of reassure people. So most of us know, like, you're more likely to be struck by lightning than killed by a shark. You're more likely to, if you think of all the things that could go wrong to you on the beach, in general.
Sunburn.
Yeah.
Slip on sunscreen and die. step on urchin?
Jellyfish. Spinal damage is listed as one here. So I guess if people are fucking around on lilos and just... hurt themselves.
Sand in the eye.
Dehydration.
Mm-hmm.
More sutures are expended on seashell lacerations of feet than shark bites.
Yeah.
So, and then just in 1987 in New York, there were 1,587 cases of humans biting humans. In that same year, there were 13 cases of sharks biting humans for the whole of the United States of America.
Don't pet unfamiliar New Yorkers. If you don't know their distress behaviors, they will defend their territory.
Yeah. What if you scare them? They'll bite back.
Please, the population's very delicate right now.
And then also in 2013, in the US, 32 people were killed by dogs, 0 were killed by sharks.
Yeah. Yeah, again, read... You don't need to learn how to read other animals' distress signals unless you're planning on interacting with them ever at all in your life.
Yeah. And it's interesting that sharks do actually exhibit distress signals, or rather, they use a lot of body language.
Mm-hmm.
So sharks that have to interact with other sharks do have quite complex social behaviours that we're only just starting to
like
investigate.
Because even if you spend 90% of your life alone, like that 10% of the time that there's a whale carcass, you're going to have to be in with another massive
yep.
predator. You don't want to get bitten because healing is a very energy-rich
mm-hmm.
process and it makes you less able to kill seals. Like,
yeah.
Tell me about how they avoid biting.
So for
people.
Great whites in particular, like if there's a whale carcass and they all show up to have a look, so the biggest shark will get first preference.
Mm-hmm.
So females tend to be bigger than males, so the big females will take whatever she wants
mm-hmm.
first, and then the younger, smaller sharks will wait until she's finished.
Yeah.
And then they'll go in and eat. And then you often see that it's not just great whites, but other sharks, that they meet each other, they'll kind of size each other up, so they kind of swim past each other and kind of have a look and go, you're bigger, so therefore you're more dominant, so I'm going to leave you alone. Unless
just,
you're...
Just like in the smoking area
yeah.
of the bar.
Unless you're a horny hammerhead male, in which case you're like, ooh, big female, good wife.
Just like in the smoking
yeah.
area of the bar.
Yeah. But what they'll do is that, if you think of a shark that's swimming along, it's pectoral fins, so the fins out to the side will
mm-hmm.
generally just be held pretty level. If a shark is starting to feel aggressive or another shark is coming too close to it, it will start to lower
mm-hmm.
those pectoral fins. It will start to arch its back.
Mm-hmm.
It will also kind of open its mouth and kind of gape
yeah.
at the other. And then often they might have erratic
Wait,
swimming
so is
behaviors.
That an anxiety behavior or an aggression behavior?
A little bit of both, I'd say.
Okay.
It's kind of like, you're coming too close.
I'm a threat,
fight.
But
yeah.
I also don't want to, yeah.
But they will also perform this behavior for humans in the
mm-hmm.
water. So people are now saying, if you can understand shark cues
mm-hmm.
like, they're giving you the chance to move away. It's kind of like when a dog raises its hackles at you or starts
yeah.
growling
mm-hmm.
it's like, if you ignore that,
like
it's
gaping its mouth and panting and people are like, oh, it's smiling. No.
Or when people look at macaques or other primates and see them bare their teeth in a smile, and it's like, no, that's a friendly gesture for humans, but
mm-hmm.
for primates that means back off, I'm gonna bite you. But then what's also really cool is that swell sharks, which are a smaller species of shark, they're called swell sharks because when they feel threatened, they like gulp in water and air, so their body expands. So then
mm-hmm.
if a shark is bitten it, it's
mm-hmm.
like, oh man, I can't swallow you because you've suddenly increased your volume.
I thought you were going to say, like, if they swallow it, it's like it's like a water balloon. It's propelled out of my mouth.
With a farting noise.
Yeah.
We can hope.
We can hope.
Herring do fart.
Air?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And but they use it to, like, communicate.
Nice.
And then the scientists studying it called these sounds fast repetitive ticks, the acronym of which is FRT. Fart.
Scientists are wonderful and nature is wonderful.
It's great. But swell sharks.
Yeah.
Scientists have found that they actually fluoresce.
Mm-hmm.
So it's different to bioluminescent, though there are bioluminescent sharks.
Mm-hmm.
So fluorescent means that it's like the proteins in your body or in your skin under certain wavelengths of light reflect that light back.
Okay, yeah.
So corals will do it. Puffin beaks do it. So
yeah.
if you have a puffin under UV light, its beak will glow
yeah.
purple. So these swell sharks under specific lights glow green.
Mm-hmm.
So we think that other swell sharks can see in this particular wavelength, and because they're a smaller shark, it allows them to communicate with each other and find each other
mm-hmm.
at night. And then it means the bigger sharks, like a great white,
can't see
yeah.
them as much. Yeah, getting back to the great white, I guess, what are their... They travel a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And you were saying that other sharks travel a lot to follow prey and seasons like that. Do we know that great whites do that, or do they travel erratically? Are they territorial? Do they have multiple territories? I'm asking you a lot of questions now. And do they have specific places they'll go to breed?
It is suspected that they definitely do have spaces that they go to breed.
Mm-hmm.
There is one called the White Shark Cafe. I can't remember exactly where it is, but sharks seem to congregate there, like males and females.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like they'll hang around at the surface and then they'll dive down a couple of hundred meters.
Mm-hmm.
Now maybe the book I was reading this in, they don't really know what's going on.
Yeah.
Maybe someone has. If anyone has a paper that's been published, if you want to send it to me, I'd be
yeah.
interested in reading it. But yeah, like they do just travel around
mm-hmm.
a lot.
Just the Snufkins of the shark world.
I guess.
I sure do just say shit, huh?
Yeah, we both say shit. That's
yeah.
why we have a podcast.
That's true.
Yeah, I feel I haven't looked into that enough to give a very informed opinion on it, but they definitely do hang around at spots where prey is. So South Africa people go to see them because there's fur seals there that the sharks show up to prey on, and then there's loads of cool videos online that the shark is traveling towards the surface so fast they like leap out of the water to catch seals.
That's cool.
It's really cool. Yeah,
I bet it's really difficult for shark populations that overfishing is an issue. So I don't think seal populations are under threat.
It depends on the species.
Yeah. Which means that the bigger sharks, the fully grown ones, are kind of okay. Like, they're not, but their food source is less threatened. So, like, being born, or being born, they do give live birth.
Depends on the species.
Great white.
Great white gives live birth.
Yeah. So
Anyway, finish your thought and then I'll talk about reproduction.
How can you not know? You do know. There's something weird in it. Like, being a young great white, like, you're born into this massive ocean. Your food source is fish. Fish are heavily depleted. In order to get big enough to eat seals, you need to eat lots of fish. There isn't lots of fish. It's hard to be a shark right now.
It is. And the main reproduction and their reproductive strategies is the main reason why they're threatened. Well, indirectly why they're threatened.
Slow growing, are they?
Yeah, very slow growing. So sharks, a lot of all the chondrichthyes, so the class of fish that have cartilage skeletons instead of bone, that includes sharks, rays, skates and chimeras. They're all very slow growing. So a lot of them don't start reproducing until they're in their teens or in their 20s. Some species don't breed until they're almost 20 or 30. So you have to survive
two or three decades.
Yeah, exactly. And then a lot of them, like, the mother shark doesn't care really for her babies once they're born, but she puts a huge amount of investment into them while they're developing inside her. So when sharks are born, whether they hatch from an egg or whether they're born from their mothers, are basically tiny adult sharks. So they're fully developed and ready to go. But that takes so much out of the mother that she can only breed in a lot of species only every
other year.
Yeah. So that slows down the reproductive rate already. The spur dog, which is found in British and Irish waters, is either endangered or critically endangered. I'm not sure if they changed the classification. But she could be pregnant for 2 years.
God. And so if that fish gets fished out of the water in that time, you've lost two, essentially.
Yeah, or three. I saw one
research voyage
that was dead that had two pups.
That's awful.
Yeah.
Are there... So you were saying it's very difficult to regulate the fishery of sharks, essentially, because they travel so much. Are there efforts to do it, at least?
There are. It's starting to get better. And I think something that we could do is just don't reduce the market for it. So the same with skates. Again, I've worked on skates and rays before. They don't get as much press as sharks do. We don't know as much about their general biology. I've eaten ray wing. I wouldn't do it now.
In living with you while you did your thesis on skates and rays in Irish waters, I learned a lot about the fishing of seafood in general. A lot of fish isn't even correctly labelled. You might be eating shark without knowing you're eating shark. You could be eating a species that hasn't been properly categorised or has been fished by someone who doesn't know what that species looks like even to categorise it. And then it can be mis-selled, I guess, fruit. Food fraud can be a thing. I'm very, very reluctant to eat seafood in general anymore. I'll eat salmon occasionally, but yeah, there's a lot of risk. It's difficult to ethically eat seafood at all.
And I think, like, in 2019, there's a DNA barcoding study, which is also what I did for my thesis, that showed that even endangered species like the spur dog and hammerheads were ending up in British
fish shops.
Rock salmon, which used to be a popular staple in fish and chip shops, is a lesser spotted dogfish that's just been labeled as something else because it sounds more appealing
mm-hmm.
to the general population. The same thing happened with the orange Ruffy.
Mm-hmm.
It was called the Slime Head. It was changed for public consumption to the orange Ruffy. Again, similar to sharks, it's not a shark at all, but
yeah.
it's a deep sea bony fish. It takes them about 30 years, I think, to become sexually mature. That whole fishery in the North Atlantic collapsed within a handful of years.
We need to treat, and again, I'm not the marine expert on this pod, I think we need to treat fish the way we treat like venison or wild boar.
Yeah.
Because we're not farming them, we're hunting them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're rare species under the threat of immense habitat destruction. Like, even if we're not physically destroying the ocean, we're kind of physically destroying the ocean. We're destroying their food chains and food webs. Fish should be a rare luxury.
And I think the worst and most frustrating thing to me about it is that fish could so easily be made a renewable resource.
Mm.
Like, we know that setting aside marine protection zones results in a spillover that results in good catches. We know if we reduce quotas and... Like, I know that I'm very aware of the social elements, and I know you can't just leave families
that have relied on fishing for generations.
And we have to have a just transition to a better way of doing it. But it theoretically could be done.
This is very similar to my feeling around soil health
mm-hmm.
and farming methods, where people are like, well, we can't ask too much of farmers. And I'm like, absolutely, you can't ask farmers to destroy their living or their income or like put their families at economic risk, but also continuing to work with the system we currently have puts them at economic risk.
Yeah.
The use of more permaculture, sustainable agricultural models is what will keep these industries alive for more time.
And I think with fish, like if you, and it's third world communities which are the most vulnerable to
yeah.
overfishing, and overfishing by us.
Yeah.
Not, if you think about like fish protein is a massive, it's so important
mm-hmm.
in a lot of countries around the world. Like, we don't eat a lot of fish for being an island nation.
Yeah.
We definitely don't. But it's all these other communities, and it's fishing communities in other countries which now have to
export.
Yeah. Or, well, not even export, but even small scale communities have found that their fish have been fished out by large scale factory ships
mm-hmm.
and are now, you know, forced to take part in more risky
mm-hmm.
fishing efforts for less reward. And it's just, it's bad. And it's a sign, it's another symptom of global inequality.
Mm-hmm.
And it's bad for everyone.
It's bad for everyone from the krill up to
exactly
the humans.
And especially when you think that, I think, you know, there are great resources to help you do it. Like the Marine Conservation Society does have the Good Fish Guide.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get an idea of what species are good to eat and not. But like sharks and rays should not be fished industrially at all. They just can't handle the pressure. Like the common skate, which used to be common.
Yeah.
As the name suggests.
Continues to be a skate.
Yep. But it is critically endangered. It's the biggest skate in the world. It used to be common in the Irish Sea. It's practically extinct there now due to overfishing. Experts reckon, or they were worried that it could be the first fish species to be fished to extinction.
I was
going to
ask, have any sharks or shark relatives, to our knowledge, gone extinct?
There was
recently
one. Before I move on, but just
mm-hmm.
did you know that there are more snow leopards in the wild than common skates?
I would like both of those numbers to be bigger.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'm not. It's not time for me to go on my rant. I've got some really nice rants about high density cities that are designed for optimum human pleasure
mm-hmm.
and joy in living, where people have fully, like, healthy, happy communities, and how we should idealize these forms of living and turn more of the world back to wilderness
mm-hmm.
but that's not relevant
there
enough.
Was I can't remember the exact details, but I know there was a shark species described in the last 2 years based on a museum specimen, mm-hmm. I think, and they reckon that it's already gone extinct.
Like, and recently?
Yeah.
Yeah, fun. We, and I say we because it is not because hashtag we are the virus or anything, not because humans have a diffused responsibility over the whole thing, but because there are specific humans, and I am not going to make myself one of the hashtag good ones. We've done some real chaos with ocean ecosystems,
yeah.
Even going back to whale fishing in the 1800s, like, those impacts are still being seen.
And the worst thing is that, like, whales and sharks, like, every species does have an impact,
mm-hmm.
on everything else. That's just how ecosystems work. But the worst thing about it is that, obviously, some species have more of an impact than others, but then all those species have an impact on us because we're not removed from nature at all. But just as an example of whaling,
like, whales create a carbon sink, don't they?
Exactly. I'm getting the exact number now, and I'm always terrified when talking about this because when I talk about whaling, fucked up everything. Industrial whaling fucked up,
mm-hmm.
everything. Industrial whaling and indigenous whaling
are vastly different,
yeah.
worlds apart.
And indigenous whaling does not have anywhere near the same impact,
yeah.
as industrial whaling had. But it is estimated now that because, again, whales, like sharks, they're long-lived. Like, a lot of sharks can live 20, 30, 40. A Greenland shark was estimated to be 272.
I know about her. She was blind and she smelled like piss.
Yeah.
I love her.
But again, if you live so long,
you smell like piss.
I guess.
It's true of humans.
But if you live a long time, you have a slow reproductive rate, so you're very vulnerable to human fishing pressures.
Mm-hmm.
But it is reckoned that because of the impacts of industrial whaling and because whale populations crashed so dramatically, that whales now store 9 million tons less carbon today than they would have if we had just left the whales alone.
Is that stored per year or is that within the entire...
I'm not entirely sure.
Okay. But that's a lot of carbon that's,
yeah.
now sitting in our atmosphere,
yeah.
that would have previously been sitting in whales.
Yeah, and if you think sharks are top predators in a lot of their ecosystems, they help keep those ecosystems healthy.
Balance, yeah.
So healthy shark populations have trickle-down of effects and definitely impact the populations of fish that we rely on.
Mm-hmm.
So healthy sharks are absolutely necessary to a healthy ocean.
Mm.
1/4 of all shark and ray species are threatened with extinction right now.
I should have foreseen how sad this knowledge would make me. Is there anything we can encourage listeners to do? And I'm asking this more because is there anything you can make me do which helps shark protections? Is there any legislation?
Badgering government is always a good idea.
Bully your representatives. You put them there. You can take them out.
Yeah.
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 Write a lot of annoying emails.
Mm-hmm.
And then also send a follow-up email in a week's time saying, I'm very disappointed you didn't get back to me,
mm-hmm.
about this.
And I think from a science activism point of view, obviously take the steps that you would if you care about climate change and overfishing, because climate change will affect sharks.
Mm-hmm.
It will affect all of us.
Great whites like cold water.
They do.
There
and it means
water.
That if... Then there was this very sensationalist article about 2 years ago saying that, like, oh, we might see more warm water sharks,
mm-hmm.
in the North Atlantic, so around the UK and Ireland, and everyone lost their goddamn minds. And it's kind of like, if they're moving north and south, that means the animals who are already there are suddenly dealing with predators that they have no idea
also
how to deal
that's,
with.
Particularly with Ireland and the UK, that's a very... false way to look at it, because we don't have the Gulf Stream,
mm.
brings warm waters up to the North Atlantic, and without that those waters would actually be colder,
yeah.
So that's,
yeah.
bullshit,
yeah. But anyway, climate change will affect the distribution of species,
mm-hmm.
it will fuck up many things, and I talk about this with kids,
mm-hmm.
a lot. If you know, if you fuck up one thing, it fucks up everything else.
We,
I don't say fuck when I speak to children, though.
That's very responsible of you. So yeah, we weave delicate webs. Mm-hmm. We do it, and so do the great whites.
Yeah, and I think with just for what you can do for sharks, it's obviously don't buy products that have shark in them.
Mm-hmm.
So shark meat, shark fins, shark souvenirs, any kind of quackery that markets like shark cartilage as a cancer cure, it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's
ethically wrong to promote it, and
yeah,
it's scientifically incorrect to believe
exactly
that it's...
There are certain chemicals that sharks do produce in their livers that do have medical impacts, but we can now synthesize those, so
mm-hmm.
you don't need to kill sharks. Other things to do, educate yourself,
mm-hmm.
educate others, be like, hey, sharks are cool, actually. If you live in areas where sharks are more of an issue, you could always look into promoting less lethal methods to control sharks. Like, I know in South Africa they have people who are shark spotters.
Mm-hmm.
To ensure safety of beaches, you can, like, revenge cullings are still a thing. Discarding fishing nets and marine waste all impacts sharks. Basically, any other issue you have with the ocean will
impact
yeah.
the species that
yeah.
live there.
Yeah. So I think be mindful in your consumer habits,
mm-hmm.
And educate yourself and educate others and be loud about it if necessary.
Going from my knowledge of dealing with terrestrial predators, is there anything humans can do with, like, wolf piss around your garden to make
mm-hmm.
deer go away? Is
there
something similar you can do with swimming beaches?
There was some people experimenting with, like, I can't think of the name of it, but making chemicals that have the essence of rotting shark
mm-hmm.
in it, and they found that that dispersed sharks. So people are looking into methods like that, or using, like, if you have a kind of an electric magnet thing that emits a charge
mm-hmm.
that then fucks up sharks' electroreception, that they decide they don't like it.
Yeah.
Like
the little buzzy traps that you have for mice.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is just kind of prevention.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, don't, if someone says a shark was spotted on a beach the day before, don't go swimming on the beach where the shark was spotted.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of it, like, I know for myself, because I live and work and play often in
the ocean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, and I think a lot of people, or a lot of anyway serious people who also care about wildlife and stuff, you don't own the ocean.
Yeah.
The sharks live there first, and it's kind of, it's an occupational hazard. Like, if you're surfing, particularly in some place like South Africa or Australia, if you're surfing in a place where sharks have been known to turn up, but, and you, like, obviously being attacked by a shark is so slim.
Yeah.
But it does happen. But it's kind of, that's a risk you take. We take risks all the time, and you just have to kind of accept that, you know, I think the
idea...
You can
choose not to be in that part of the
exactly.
ocean.
And I think the outrage people have when they hear about a shark attack is so wrong, because the shark isn't out to get you, and it's kind of like, how dare this animal even think about...
Mm.
hurting this person. It's like, it's not thinking along that line.
See,
like,
humans,
if you're in the same space, you have to deal with the notion that you might encounter the animals
else there.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, and I think a lot of this is a problem with humans have altered terrestrial ecosystems so much that there's such a slim chance of getting attacked by terrestrial predators, which still happens. Like, if you're in a, like, national park in the US, you might get attacked by a bear or a coyote. Like, if you're in certain parts of India, like, a tiger might get you, and that's because that's where they live.
Yeah.
Like, but people seem to feel almost an, like, they have a right to the ocean.
Yeah.
Which is just not true. We have swimming pools. If you want a area that you can swim in without any risk of wildlife attack, barring maybe a pigeon flying in, we have swimming pools.
Yeah.
So this movie is obviously very sensationalist.
Mm-hmm.
It portrays a shark eating, what, four people over a long weekend?
Yeah.
That's not how they hunt, is it?
No. There were, in 1916, there was a spate of shark attacks along the Jersey Shore, I believe, where a lot of people were attacked in a short period of time. But even now they reckon that was a bull shark instead of a great one. Like, it's so rare.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, oh, well, it's... Yeah, but like, a lot of... I haven't read the book. I would like to read it.
You've already read it.
Yeah. Can't believe it made me cry. Anyway, back to sharks. Yeah, I'm sure I can cry over sharks.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I don't even doubt that for a second.
But yeah, no, a lot of, especially in the film Jaws, it has been sensationalized. As the author himself said, sharks do not carry out revenge attacks on people. And they don't deliberately hunt people down. Like, other animals do.
Yeah.
But sharks
don't. Who does?
Well, polar bears have been recorded to deliberately track down humans. Big cats sometimes. Big crocodiles who are quite happy to eat people. I know with the case of big cats, a lot of the cases is if they're older and just can't hunt the more agile prey that they usually go after, then they're kind of like, oh, I'll settle for
humans. Are everywhere. Sharks do not want to eat you. You are not a seal. You are a raisin cookie and you are less appealing. They are living things, so all they want is to fucking feed. Like, it's very straightforward.
And I think Jaws is a very interesting film to just think about. Like, it's a good film in general.
I did enjoy having the impression of having watched it through my psychic connection.
But you totally didn't watch.
No, I've never watched it.
You totally
didn't
jump at the scariest bit.
No, I've never experienced fear in my life.
But I think as a film, it's great. Like, it has a good plot. The suspense is cool. The score, people have talked about the score before. So many sea shanties.
Yes.
Kind of homoerotic.
There's a little bit of leg touching, I gather, from my connections.
Where was I going with this?
It's a good movie, but bad for sure. You thought of two bros on a boat in wrapping their legs together, although they fight a little bit. They truly trust one another. But there's also a shark, so let's go back to that.
And I think if we're watching Jaws now, we should think about this. This is a movie shark. This is a monster shark. It looks like a real shark, and it acts somewhat like a real shark, but it's not a real shark. Sharks do not behave like
nothing's this. Nothing's that hungry. What Jaws does in this movie is the equivalent of me having, like, a three-course meal for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day.
While
for
I'm
a
trying
weekend.
To stab you.
I'm having a three-course meal that's trying to kill me.
And you still keep going back for it.
All weekend. And
we do still go back for food that we know will kill us long term, though.
That's true, but not ones that are actively hunting
us. That is true.
Sharks don't know long term. Yeah. They don't understand that.
And I think that we know of. I've never asked.
Apparently they are good at timekeeping.
They are.
So perhaps.
And I think Jaws is also really interesting from the point, it really shows that art has a real tangible impact on society.
Yeah.
And culture is important. And we talk about representation a lot. We mainly talk about queer representation in media.
And minority identities of people,
And I valiantly refrained from doing that last episode.
You did, it was very powerful.
Thank
you.
But I think this film shows that representation of the natural world is also important. And it just shows how science communication is incredibly important. But it's actually a scene in the film where Hooper, who is the marine biologist, is trying to educate people, but because they're obviously scared and anxious, they don't want to listen to him trying to calm them down.
Yeah.
And it just shows, we just have to look at the world around us.
Yeah.
It's like, science is important and proper representation of science is important. This film resulted in real sharks dying.
Yeah. There's so much to talk about in this. I feel like our past two episodes were, we had the benefit of having a very short scene in an otherwise unrelated movie to talk about the fish, but this is so complex.
Yeah.
It's such a big movie for cultural impact. And you're absolutely right. Like, actual sharks have died and do die because of the fear people experience from a movie.
Yeah. One movie. I really love sharks. And skates and rays.
You mentioned orcas earlier.
Yes.
So how do orcas and sharks interact?
So orcas in New Zealand have been recorded catching sharks before and feeding on them. They also hunt rays, stingrays in particular. Sharks have this interesting reflex called tonic immobility. So basically, I don't know the exact chemistry behind it, but basically if you grab a shark and flip it onto its back, it goes into a catatonic state, which they can stay in for about 15 minutes, and then after that, they might drown.
I was going to say, aren't sharks passive breeders, or some of them?
Some of them, yeah. So we call that ram ventilation. So that means the shark has to continually keep moving to pass water over its gills. Other sharks can use methods like buccal pumping. So that's basic, like, in the way, if you look at a fish that's opening and closing its mouth, it's passing water over its gills. So sharks can also do that.
For sharks, goldfish do that.
Yeah. So bony fish have an operculum generally, so it's like a gill cover, so they can open their mouth and open that and just pass water over their gills. Rays and skates and sharks that live on the bottom have spiracles, so they're like little holes just behind the eyes, so they can use that to keep breathing while their face is in the sand, basically. But yeah, so something like a great white needs to keep moving to keep breathing. So it's only ever been recorded a handful of times, like 2 to 3 times, but there have been instances of orcas attacking smaller great whites, some still pretty big, and using that tonic immobility basically to flip them over and render them pretty harmless.
Orcas are very intelligent creatures.
Oh yeah, actually. Orcas have culture.
They do have culture. They have an intense attachment to their young, a society type organization where it's very complex, like, not to anthropomorphize, like, but they've got, again, very slow reproductive strategy.
Yeah.
They raise one another's young.
They go through menopause.
Yeah, and then postmenopausal, postmenopausal orcas will continue to assist younger members of their families in raising their offspring. So fascinating creatures. We should really do an episode on Free Willy at some point,
yeah.
I guess.
Technically a fish.
Technically a
fish. Like James McAvoy.
Like James McAvoy.
We'll explain that when someone asks.
I would like it if you didn't ask, dear listener. Just listen to me say this and accept it into your soul. James McAvoy is a fish. Yeah.
It is known.
It is known.
But what's also interesting is that the orcas, like, there have been cases of orcas attacking great whites in South Africa, and they just took the liver and nothing else.
Okay.
Because if you think a shark's liver is huge.
Yeah.
And it has loads of oil in it. It's how they stay buoyant.
Yeah.
So there's lots of energy in that. What's also really cool, though, is that if you think of the basking shark, which is the second largest shark in the world.
The biggest whale shark?
Yeah. So the biggest shark in Irish waters. So they're generally about, like, 10 meters long, but they can get bigger. They were hunted because of their liver, for the oil that's in it. But they're so, like, their liver is so big, and they have so much of it, like, so much oil and stuff in it, that a basking shark that weighs 1,000 kilos in the, like, in air, if I manage to lift it out of the water, in the water, it only weighs about 3.3 kilos because of the
buoyancy.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't understand how physics works. That's really interesting.
Isn't it?
That's so interesting.
Basking sharks are cool. I haven't seen one yet, but I hope to.
Yes. So, most of our conversation has been about sharks this episode, because the book and the movie, from what I hear, mostly the song, obviously, is about sharks. But there's also something to be said about science communication in a time of fear and pressure. Because Hooper, our marine biologist in this many media art form, has to deal with some very fearful people. I don't suppose you've got anything to say on that.
I mean, I think we just have to look at what's happening right now, and again with climate change, and again with vaccines. I think it's really difficult. I think the election of a certain someone,
a certain someone's, a certain political movement. Tendency.
We do not support fascism.
We
on
don't.
This podcast.
Pro fish, anti fat.
Ooh, we can make a sticker out of that.
Love fish, hate fascism.
Yeah. A fish would punch a fascist.
A fish would punch a fascist. Oh my god, imagine a shark in a cool denim jacket with patches on it. Ooh, punk shark. You could get so many cartilageous piercings if you're all cartilage.
I think sharks are punk.
Sharks are punk,
yeah. But anyway, yeah, science communication right now is difficult.
Yeah.
Social media is great, but also social media is the worst.
Yeah, you get a lot of misinformation.
Yeah, and I think it's really, it's difficult because people are scared and people are emotional, and that makes it difficult to communicate. And I'm not excluding myself from this when I say, because I've gotten into very emotional arguments about it. It's really, really hard to try and listen to other people
when you're emotional.
Yeah.
Being a person, like, you have certain foibles, and being a person, no matter how much knowledge and wisdom you have, it is most difficult to use that knowledge and wisdom well when you're in an emotionally reactive state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think this shows
it's revenge callings.
Yeah. And I think especially the whole plot line of let's open the beaches for economic profit, even though we know it's not safe, is very relevant.
Unfortunately, yeah, I see a lot of people, well, actually, not a lot of people, but a loud minority of people calling for our current pandemic closures to be brought to an end so that people can get a haircut or a coffee. And the thing is, you need to understand that all behavior entails risk. Going into the ocean entails risk. Going to the supermarket entails risk. When people who are experts have well-founded reasons for telling you that there is too much risk to do something, try find different things to do.
Yeah.
Mm. Anything else to say on
Jaws? I always have many. Well, on Jaws and sharks in general.
I really hope we find another shark movie.
Oh, we will.
Guys, recommend us shark movies.
And recommend us fish movies in general.
Yeah.
Even if it's only there for one scene.
Absolutely. If it's vaguely in the background and it might be a fish, tell us about it.
If James McAvoy is there.
James McAvoy is there.
I'm very sorry if he's listening. But
I'm not. Scrounger. Okay, so if we're wrapping up, what starfish rating do you give Jaws?
I think, I'm trying to think of what we've given our other two movies.
We gave one.
I think we gave
a fraction of one
to Shazam.
Yeah.
I think we gave a 4 to it.
Yeah, the fish care was pretty good.
It was pretty good,
yeah.
I think for this one, obviously the portrayal of the fish is somewhat inaccurate.
Yeah.
But they do make an effort to throw in
a lot of accuracies. Yeah. Bite apertures, jaw being used as a hunting trophy. There's a marine biologist there representing kind of the best knowledge of the time.
They talk a lot about, you know, tiger sharks and thresher sharks, which is cool. Tiger sharks will eat everything and anything, though, which is very iconic of them. They've been called the trasher, the dustbin shark.
They're just full of rubbish.
Yeah.
Fish are relatable.
Tiger sharks will see a piece of litter and go, is anyone going to eat that? And then not wait for an answer.
I love that for them.
I think just because this was so significant, I think we should give it 3.
Yeah?
Yeah.
A lot of good, a lot of bad. We get 3 starfish.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed discussing this movie
so
with
did
you.
So did I.
I always love recording this podcast because I get to hear really cool stuff.
Yeah. And I always go like, but what about this thing? And there's this thing. And I learned this thing. And there's too many cool facts.
And then I can think about a shark with a little silver loop through its nose.
Yeah. I did say, though, remind me to talk about the epaulette. And I think we should maybe end on that just because I think it's cool. It's a little shark from Australia.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cute. I think it's really cute anyway.
How little is little?
Like meter.
A meter, okay.
That's... Maybe a little bit bigger. But it's often called the shark that can walk on land because its pectoral and pelvic girdle are designed so they can, like, move. Look, there's loads of videos on YouTube. There's one with the David Attenborough narration, and it's great. But it can move its fins, so, like, it's walking.
Mm-hmm.
And what it can do is that if it's hunting in the reef and in shallow water, when the tide goes out, parts mm-hmm. of the reef are exposed. So it can use this ability to walk from pool to pool
mm-hmm.
to continue hunting. And it's able to survive out of the water because it can shut down the organs that aren't necessary. So, like, it shuts down a lot of the power going to its brain and mm-hmm. its heart and stuff. And then it gets into the water and just kickstarts.
I really would
again.
Have thought brain and heart were two rather essential
well,
ones.
Well, I mean, it shuts down the stuff that it doesn't need.
Okay, cool. It's complex,
well, it
logarithmic
slows, yeah, like it
equations.
Slows down. It's also, I think, more tolerant of, like, carbon dioxide buildup.
Mm-hmm.
It's super cool.
Yeah.
I would recommend looking them up because...
They walk on land.
They do.
And they're friends.
They do. They are friends.
One, give them space and respect.
Exactly. Speaking of, just because we are in Ireland, how many species of cartilaginous fish, or sharks, skates, rays, and chimeras do you think have been recorded in Irish waters?
40?
More.
100?
Less.
70?
Yeah.
70?
Yeah.
Nice!
But 71.
Cool.
I say this to kids and it always blows their mind. It's great.
Yeah, because I mean, I can only think of like maybe 10, and
mm-hmm.
a lot of that is because I know you.
Yeah, and a lot of, some of those are endangered and critically
mm-hmm.
endangered, so we know, like, the common skate, basking shark, poor beagle, which is a relative of the great white, blue sharks,
70 is so many.
Yeah, a lot of those are deep water
yeah.
species and small. So any Irish listeners, you should get involved in shark conservation. Know
yeah.
that you're not at risk.
Mm-hmm.
The only shark attack in Irish waters recently was a fisherman who hooked a blue shark and tried to take the hook out of its mouth and got bitten. And he was like, it was my fault.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're really cool. You should look up Purse Search Ireland. So
mm-hmm.
you can often... Oh, I've meant to talk about reproductive shark. Anyway, okay, very, very briefly. This is the last thing, I swear.
This is our longest episode so far.
There's so much to talk
there
about.
There is,
though.
And I was like holding myself back from asking questions like, how big is a blue shark?
4 meters.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Okay, continue.
But sharks have lots of different reproductive modes. So some of them are oviparous, so it means they lay eggs.
Mm-hmm.
So all skates lay eggs. So
mm-hmm.
if you go onto the beach, you can find mermaids' purses. So they're the egg cases from dogfish and some species.
They've always looked a little bit like cartilage to me.
Mm,
are they made
not,
from a similar structure?
No.
Okay.
But you should go find those. There's loads of guides online that you can identify and see what
mm-hmm.
species it is, and then please let a scientist know, because that's how we get an idea of what species are around the place. We have stingrays in Tralee, which is awesome.
That is cool.
Yeah. And then some sharks give birth to live young,
mm-hmm.
but then there's two modes of doing that. So it's like ovoviviparous, so it's like there's eggs in the mother's womb that then hatch, and then live
yeah.
sharks, and then there's actual live birth, so viviparity. So that's where the shark kind of has a placenta-like structure,
mm-hmm.
so more like a mammal than you'd expect.
Mm-hmm.
So white sharks are ovoviviparous.
Mm-hmm.
So a mother shark, great white, can have 4 to 14 babies.
That's so many.
Yeah.
Do they fight in the womb?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know.
They would eat unfertilized eggs. In
the
womb.
Okay.
So that's called oophagy.
That's a reproductive strategy? That's a strategy a lot of creatures use. I know some frogs and newts, etc.
Yeah.
Who have few enough,
mm-hmm.
Like rainforest species, who have few enough offspring will lay unfertilized eggs instead. Because they can't make milk. We're
yeah.
privileged. Hashtag mammal privilege.
Some sharks can actually produce a uterine milk, inverted commas.
Cool.
Like, it's not mammal milk, but
mm-hmm.
it's a nourishing substance.
Yeah, like pigeon milk is also not milk. And
yeah.
what else is there? There's something... I think spider milk. It's kind of a mashed egg kind of thing.
I wouldn't know off the top of my head.
Yeah. Again, we're getting so... This is too much episode.
I think we do need to find another shark movie.
We do. What was the thing I was going to say? There was another thing I was going to say or ask. God damn it. I guess we're going to have to find another shark movie.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Sharks are cool. TLDR.
TLDR, sharks are cool, leave them alone unless you know what you're doing, and even then mostly leave them alone unless there's a good reason.
Also
not to.
Conserve predators in all aspects of ecosystems.
Absolutely, yeah. Animals aren't good or evil.
Yeah.
They're just...
And Jaws is a good movie.
And thanks for talking to me.
Yeah, and thank you for letting me talk about sharks.
You're very welcome. It was a pleasure.
And thank you guys for listening.
Yeah, let us know what you thought of the episode, and if you know any other movies that we can use as a thinly veiled excuse to talk about sharks.
Or any other fish.
Or any other fish.
Please do let us know. Goodbye. Jaws is dead.